Today we're going to continue studying matrices. And so I want to go back and just formally define the matrix operations. Before I do, let me just again go over the definition of what a matrix is. So a matrix is just a doubly indexed family of numbers. So there's a family of numbers Aij indexed by two numbers I and J, which go in a specific range. So if we write the matrix I, if you look at the elements with the entries Aij, if you want to look at the entries, say, in the first row, these would be the entries A11, A12, A1n. So this matrix is going to have n columns. The second row would be A21, A22, A2n. And then the last row, if there are m rows, will be AM1, AM2, AMN. Now, we usually denote this by just indicating the element in the ith row, jth column. That's, or the entry, so to speak, in the ith row, jth column. So Aij would be the entry in the ith row, jth column, or the number that's in that position. And we usually indicate what the sizes of the matrix are, that is, what the range of the i's and j's can be. The row indices, in this case, can go from 1 to m, and the column indices go from 1 to n, so we can denote it like this. So I goes from 1 to m, so that means I'm going to have m rows, and j goes from 1 to n, so I have n columns. So here, I is what we call the row index, and j is the column index. Okay. And aij is equal to the ij entry of the matrix A. Now we say the size of A is this pair of numbers, mn, where m is the number of rows, or the range of the row indices, and n is the number of columns, or the range of the column indices. So that's the size of A. And, or sometimes we also say that it's also m by n, also say A is m by n. Their times doesn't mean n times n, although m times n is the number of entries, but it's m by n. And just from force of habit, I don't think the book uses this terminology, but I think it's kind of suggestive. We'll let R upper superscript m by n, this is the set of all m by n matrices. So for example, if I just look at those matrices with one column, so if I look R, say, n m by 1, this would be the set of all column matrices of the form. They would look like this, A11, A21, AM1, where the I1 belong to R. But usually when we have a column, we usually just drop that second index because it's fixed at 1. So sometimes you just drop it. But when it's there, you can visually see that it's a doubly indexed array where the numbers are arranged in a column. And again, R, if you look at 1 by n, that's going to be the set. These are the set of column vectors of m by 1 column vectors. And R 1 by n, that's the set of A1. Now we're going to have just the rows. There'll be n columns, so it's a row matrix. So A11, A12, A1n, where the A1j belong to R. These are the set of row matrices. Well, I should consider vectors. They are vectors, but let me recall them column matrices here. Okay, is there a question? Okay, these are the column matrices. Now notice I put commas there when I write. When I write them as a column, I don't have to put the commas because the placement doesn't confuse. So you won't have, why you put columns there is because if you have 1, 1 and no comma, is that 1 or 11? So you just put something in between just to, although strictly speaking, when you write it as an array, you don't need commas because the columns are clear, are clearly marked, and so you know how many entries you have. So that, okay. Now, we can add, matrices are behave like vectors. You can add two matrices of the same size. So addition of matrices. Now, you can only add two matrices if they're of the same size. So if you take a matrix whose ijth entry is aij, and a b a matrix whose ijth entry is, say, bij, and supposing then they're both of the same size, supposing m by n. So now I have two m by n matrices. Now, in that case, I can add them. I can't add two matrices of different sizes. Just I can't add vectors of two different sizes. So in this case, the sum of A plus B is, by definition, the matrix whose ijth entry, let's call it Cij, where Cij is just the sum of the ijth entry of A and the ijth entry of B. So that's just like ordinary vectors. You add matrices by adding corresponding entries. So a matrix is really a vector. In fact, you can straighten out the matrix by writing all the rows in a line and you have a vector. Or you could write all the columns in one column and you get a long, tall vector. And the number of entries would be precisely m times n. So really, an m by n matrix is really an m n-dimensional vector. It's the same thing. Okay. Why we write it in arrays is because there's this matrix multiplication which is plays a crucial role. Now you can also, as vectors, you can also multiply, a matrix times a scalar. So if I take A is a so multiplication of a matrix by scalars, so if I take a scalar C, and if I take a matrix A, whose ijth entry is aij, and supposing it's m by n, then C times A is just the matrix obtained by multiplying each of the entries of the matrix A by the scalar C, just as we do with vectors. That's simple enough. So just for example, let's just do a couple of examples. Then if you take the matrix 1, 2, 1, 1, plus 1, 1, 2, 0, you're just going to get the matrix, just add corresponding entries, 2, 3, 3, and 1. And if I multiply one of the matrices by some scalar, say let's just multiply the first one by 2, 1, 2, 1, 1, then I'm just going to multiply each of the entry by 2. Okay. So that's simple enough. There's really nothing new there in terms of addition of matrices. But they also one can prove that the vector properties also hold for matrix addition and multiplication by scalars. All the properties of vectors hold. So the vector properties that the seven vector properties for example, you have associativity of addition, you have you have a zero vector. Well, in this case, the zero matrix, for example, if you have the matrix 0, 0, all entries 0, that's called the zero matrix. And it obviously has the properties that if you add this matrix to any other matrix, in this case, the 2 by 2, you get back the same matrix. So in general, the zero matrix. So if you take the 0 belong to the 0 m by m matrix, this is the matrix is defined, has all its entries equal to 0. So 0, this is the 0 matrix. the entries of this matrix 0 are all 0. So 0 equals the matrix, say, Aij, where Aij equals 0 for all I and j. That's the 0 matrix. And it has the same property. Again, you can take the negative matrix if you have a matrix A. You can take the matrix minus A is then just going to be the matrix minus Aij, same as vectors, and you have A plus minus A, it's minus A plus A, it's the 0 matrix. So you have the usual arithmetic for matrices with respect to addition and multiplication by scalars as you do for vectors. So the usual properties hold. Okay. Now, the more serious operation is matrix multiplication. Now, for matrix multiplication, yeah, question. Yeah, I'm going pretty fast here, but I think some of these things are okay. Now, we've already defined matrix multiplication for the case of 2x2 matrices. I'm just going to extend that definition to the arbitrary case. Okay. So now let me first define it for the case of a product of a row vector times a column vector. That's the simplest one. So let's take a row vector, x1, x2, xn, and we're going to multiply it by a column vector, y1, y2, yn. Now I have to take the same number of entries in the row as in the column simply because, as we saw before, when you do it, it's just basically a dot product of two vectors. So it's just this is a 1 by n matrix, and this one is an n by 1. So when I'm going to multiply them, I'm going to get a scalar or one. I'm going to get a 1 by 1 matrix, and that 1 by 1 matrix is just the sum of the corresponding products of the entries of the two vectors. So this is a 1 by 1 matrix. Now, we just write it x1. So identify a 1 by 1 matrix with a scalar. So product of a row vector times a column vector is defined, providing they have the same number of entries, in which case the product is just the sum of the products of the corresponding entries, or if you like, the dot product of the two vectors viewed as n-dimensional vectors in Rn. Okay.
So how is it a 1 by 1 vector?
This is a scalar.
It's not a 1 by
1. No. Okay. Let me define it in general. I'll show you that. So let's now define what I mean by. So let's just do another case. Let's take the product of, let's take A now to be an M by N matrix. And I'm going to take now an n by 1 matrix. Let's call it x1, xn. I'm basically going over what we did last time in the case of 2 by 2. So this is a n by 1 matrix. And I'm going to define Ax. This is going to be an m by 1 matrix, which is a column matrix. In other words, I take an m by n matrix, and I multiplied by an n by 1 matrix, or a column matrix, whose size is the same as the column size of the original matrix, because I want to take dot products of the rows of the matrix A times the column vector, and do that for each row to get a column vector. So this is just equal to, I'm going to take the ith row of, I'm going to take the ith row of A, so let me just say what I'm going to do it before I actually write it down. So this is going to be a column vector, and it's going to be the ith row, first row of A times x, second row of A times x, and here I'm going to have the nth row of A times x. Here where ai equals ith row of A. So we're, this idea of thinking about matrix multiplication this way is very handy, as we'll see a little later. So now let's just exactly write that out in all detail here. So the first row of A is A11, A12, A1n, and I'm going to multiply each of those by x1, x2, xn. So I'm going to get A, first entry, A11, x1, plus A12, x2, plus A1n, xn. And the second row will be A21, x1, plus A22, x2, plus A2n, xn. And then let me write down the last row. It's AM1 X1 plus AM2 X2 plus AMN XN. And you see what you get as entries to the column are linear combinations of the variables X1 through XN, as you would see on the left-hand side of a linear system of equations. In fact, this is how Y matrix multiplication was defined, so that just because of this to do exactly that. Okay, now in general, so now I know I can multiply, so let me give the general definition. So let me take A to be a M by N matrix, and let me take B, whose ijth entry is Bij, to be an N. Now I want to do here N by P matrix. So basically, if I think of the matrix B as formed by columns, as long as the size of those column vectors is the same as the number of rows in B is the same, that's going to be the size of the column vector, is going to be the same as the number of columns in A, I can take those dot products column by column. So I just take each so I do this, so AB, so the ijth, and so the so the jth column, of AB is just equal to A times the jth column of B. So in other words, what I do is I take each row of A and I multiply it by the entries in the jth column of B, and I get precisely a column vector, an m-dimensional column vector. Where in this case, if you look above, the x1 through xn are going to be replaced by, in this particular case, if you look at the jth column so let's just write it out. So what is the ijth entry of AB? So therefore the ijth, let's just write it out in all its glory. Ijth entry of AB is precisely, what am I going to do? How do I get it? Well, I have to take the ith row of A and multiply it by the jth column of B. That's exactly what I'm doing. It's going, let's write that out. Ith column of A, so that's AI, I have to take the ith row of A, which is AI1, AI2, AIN, because they're in, times, I have to write now a column vector, which is now the jth column of B. So this is B1J, B2J, BNJ. BNJ. That's the jth, M. Oh, sorry, that's N. Right, sorry.
So would this be the ijth entry, or is the I?
This is the ijth entry of AB. Thank you. Ijth entry of AB is just equal to the ith row of A, which is that, times the jth column of B. And B has n rows, so it's BNJ. Okay. So this is, which is equal to the ith row of A times j's column of B. Okay. So that's precisely what you get here. If you're going to take the ith row of AB, you're going to replace x1 through xn in the ith row, which is going to be AI1, and then x1 is going to be B1, B1j. So the jth column will be B1j of B, will be B1j, B2j, Bnj. And I'm going to replace the x's in the above by those entries. And so what you get is just this number, which is equal to AI1 B1j plus AI2 B2j plus, et cetera, plus AIN BNj. And if you really want to get fancy, if you want, you can introduce summation notation. This is just the summation as k goes from 1 to n. It's a sum of the following products of the form AIK BKJ. So that's what I'm doing. I'm taking a sum of products of the form, an entry from the ith row of A, namely AI something, AIK, and then multiplying it by the corresponding entry in the kth column, by the entry in the kth column of B, namely BKJ, taking all those products and adding them up as I vary k from 1 to n. Okay. So that's the. So you can also see the ith row entry is just A times the jth column of B, as we said. But you can also see very easily the ith row. We also have the ith row of A, B, is equal to the ith row of A times B. I'll just let you puzzle that out, because this is basically what you're doing here. If you take the ith row of AB, take the ith row of N, you're going to multiply it by each of the columns of B. So that's what you're doing. You're just multiplying the ith row of A times B. So that's a useful way of calculating sometimes if you want to multiply it. It's a lot faster, as we'll see, to do things. Okay. Some of the properties that we can see right away from this definition are, give a couple of examples. So let's just give some examples. Let's do this one. Well, we already know that if we take 1, 2 times 2, 1, we just get the 1 by 1 matrix, which is 1 times 2 plus 2 times 1, which is 2 plus 2, which is 4. So that's a 1 by 1 matrix. Now, that's well defined, because a 1 by 2 times a 2 by 1 is a 1 by 1. In general, the product of an m by n and an n by p is an m by p. So let's now, if we can actually multiply these in the other order if we like. A little bit surprising, but you can actually do it. Because this first matrix is a 1 by 2, and this one is a 2, the other way around. The first one is an example of a 2 by 1, and the first one is 2 by 1, the second one is 1 by 2. So when I multiply them, what should I get? A 2 by 2. Okay, so you see right away that matrix multiplication does behave like ordinary multiplication. For one thing, if you take the product of two matrices and do it in the reverse order, you're not going to get the same thing. Well, in this case, it's because of a silly thing, because of the size. You couldn't expect, it's immoral to expect that they're going to be equal. But we'll see if the same is true even if they're the same size, or what they call square. These are examples of rectangular matrices if they're not have the same row and column size. Now, in this particular case, how do you do this? How would you do that? Well, you have to take the first row. So we'll take the first row of this first matrix, and I have to multiply that by the column vector. So what I do, I'm just multiplying the entries by the scalar 2. So this would be, so in the first row, it would just be 2, 4. In the second row, it would just be 1, 2. So that's the product of the two. Okay. Let's give an example where the matrices are square. Say if I take 1, 1, 1, 1, and let me take 1, minus 1, 1, minus 1. These are examples that we call square matrices. Square matrix is square, the row and column, if it has the same number of rows as columns. So this is 2 by 2 and 2 by 2. So the answer should be a 2 by 2. Then what 2 by 2 matrix is it? Well, if I take the first row of A and multiply by the first column, I get 0, right? Same for the first row times the second column, I get 0. Go to the second row, well, it's because it's the first row is the same as the second row, the matrix is just going to repeat. So the second row, this matrix will be the same. Okay. So it's the zero matrix. So here you have, again, something curious which you don't have in numbers. Here I have a product of two non-zero matrices equal to the zero matrix. So something is nasty is afoot here when, in terms of matrix multiplication. It's not business as usual. There's something rather deep going on. Now let's just multiply this in the reverse order. And what do I get? Well, if I do that, I'm going to get 2, 2, and minus 2, minus 2. Here, you see now that if you interchange, really, in a situation where you might expect them to be the same because they're the same size, it's not. They're not equal. Okay. So so in general, we have the commutative law doesn't hold. Therefore, for matrix multiplication, does not obey the commutative law. First difference. I.e., AB is not equal to BA in general. Although there are some cases where it's actually true, as we'll see. They can commute. And where they do commute is very important. For example, in theory of quantum mechanics, where you represent states states are vectors and the measurements are given by matrices or operators, then the uncertainty principle just means that two certain operators don't commute, the position operator and the AB is not equal to BA. And then the position, the operator that measures position, the operator that measures momentum, they don't commute. And there's a famous equation relating AB minus BA, Planck's constant. But anyway, these are, okay, so they don't commute. Now, one property that does hold is the associative property. We already proved it for 2 by 2 matrices. So when this product is defined, ABC is equal to A times BC when both sides are defined. So when they have a possibility of being equal, then they are in fact equal. Now how would they have to define? A would have to be M by N, and B would have to be N by P, and C would have to be P by something, P by R. And then those would be compatible sizes, and under those circumstances, it would be matrix. Now the proof goes the same way. You prove this by showing, and we did this last time. I'm not going to go through again. You prove this by just showing it for columns. Basically, the way you work with matrix multiplication is you try to reduce it to the case where C is a column, and you use the fact by the jth column of a product is just the first times the jth column of the last factor. And you can do that on both sides. And so proof, you have to show that A, B times the jth column, well, let me write times the jth column, well, times the jth column of C, that's the jth column of ABC, it's the jth column of C times AB, is equal to the jth column of ABC, which is equal to A times the jth column of BC, which is B times the jth column of C. So we're going to use that that way of calculating. This A times jth column of BC, which is equal to B times the jth, A times, which is equal to A times, which is equal to A times B times the jth column of C. So in other words, I've reduced it to the case where C is a column. So this reduces it to proving for a column vector. So this reduces to proving the result for a column matrix C. I.e., you want to show that A, B times X equals A times BX for X a column matrix. And I did that last time for the case of 2x2. It's the same thing. It's a good exercise where you go through that. You just have a few more entries to work with, but the principle is exactly the same. So this is the associative law. So therefore the associative law A B C equals A B C holds for matrix multiplication. Now that's very important. I mean, if we didn't have that, we would be really lost. Okay? Yes? This reduces to proving the result for column matrices, for a column matrix C. So in other words, just by taking the jth column of both sides, you see that then the equality at the end becomes, I have to show that A times the jth column of C, that's the jth column of ABC, is equal to, I have to show that that's equal to A times, that's equal to the jth column of A times BC. But A times the jth column of BC is A times, the jth column of A BC, it's the A times the jth column of BC, which is B times the jth column of C. And so in other words, this is just a nice way of reducing it to the case where it's simpler. That way you just have less entries to have in your mind. The problem is with all these games, too many entries get in the way and you get really confused. So this way, by getting rid of the entries Cij and we just concentrate on a particular column of C, then it becomes much technically easier to prove. That's the only advantage. Okay. So now what we can do, we can multiply, use this to define powers of matrices. So if you have if A is a square matrix, so a matrix A equals Aij is said to be square if it has the same number of rows as columns. If it has the same number of rows and columns. E A belongs to R, say, n by n. Now, in that case, we can take powers of a matrix in this case. In this case, we can take A squared. That's defined to be A times A, just the product of A with itself. Okay? And similarly, A cubed is just A times A times A. Or if you like, it's just A squared times A. Okay. And in general, you can define A to the n plus 1 times A to the n plus 1, that's A to the n times A. This is kind of what we call an inductive definition of matrix multiplication. By the way, A to the 0 is defined to be the identity matrix. Well, let me define it formally. Formally, this is the identity matrix. That's by definition. And this is the matrix. It looks like this, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, and then it's 0, 0, 1. Okay. That's the identity matrix. Now, why you can define powers is because you have the associative law. I mean, if you didn't have the associative law, A times A times A is ambiguous. Because is it A times A times A, or is it A times A times A? So you really, and it can happen, you can actually find instances where you have multiplications where the associative doesn't law, where you cannot compute powers. But for matrices, you can compute powers. So you have this property. And another important property of powers is that A to the M times A to the N, oh, I can't use the same because I've already used M. So let's call this, say, A to the K and times A to the L. This is equal to A to the K plus L. So I multiply A, which is A factors A, times A to the L, which is L factors A, and I multiply, and I'm going to get K plus L factors A, which just proves that. Okay. So in this particular case, you see that in this case, this is equal to A to the L, A to the K. So in this case, powers of a matrix do commute with one another. That's one important situation where they do, and it's really quite important. In fact, the theory of a single operator is amenable simply because of that fact. That the powers commute with one another. Okay. In quantum mechanics, two operators can be simultaneously measured if and only if they commute. That's the fact that there are operators which don't commute, this means that there are measurements that if you perform them in different orders, you don't get the same result. It depends on how you perform them. A very unfortunate state of events, but of affairs. But it's okay. So the next thing we want to do, this is the important thing, is what does it mean for a matrix to be invertible? This is important for the theory of equations, as we saw last time, because if we have a system of equations, AX is equal to Y, system of equations written in matrix form, then if you have a matrix B such that B times A is the identity, if, say, B times A is the identity matrix, then you have, because of the associative law, X is going to be equal to BY. So if you can find a matrix such that B times A is the identity, then you have a way of actually solving for X in terms of Y. Then if the original system has a solution, then that must be it. So this would say the system would be. Now, if you have a matrix with, if also A times B is the identity matrix, then X equals BY implies that if you multiply both sides by X, AX equals A times BY, which is by the associative law ABY. Now AB we're assuming is the identity, and the identity times Y is Y. It's a very important property which I should have stated about the identities. Call this the identity I. The identity matrix has the property, this is the identity, in this case, I, n by n matrix, the identity matrix times A is A. Now, the identity, there are various identities. There's one for each size. You also have, A times I equals A. So the identity, in this case for square matrices, the I is the same, but you can have an identity, if you have an identity M by M matrix, then you can multiply that by an M by N matrix, A, and you'll get back A. If you want to multiply A and M by N matrix, by identity, you'd have to choose an identity N by N matrix, and then you would still get back A. No, we'll come back to that in a moment. So you see that what this says, so therefore, if there is a matrix B such that AB is an identity matrix and BA is an identity matrix, in this case, it's gonna have, if that happens, then the size of we're gonna see the size of A and B have to be square. At this point, I'm not assuming that A and B are square. If they're not, then A, B, and BA will have different sizes, so the I's are going to be have different sizes. But I just allow the possibility that I and the two I's in here are different identity matrices. I could put a subscript N if you like to say, let's call it M and N here. I M equals identity M by M matrix. So in other words, if A is M by N, then the size of B, how am I going to get a matrix B such that AB is square? Then B is going to have to be N by M, in which case the product is going to be M by M, and if it has to be the identity, it's the identity M by M matrix. Similarly, if A is M by N, in order for B times A to be square, B must have the size opposite to A. It would have to be N by M times an M by N will give me an N by N, and that would be, it could in that case be morally right, then it could be the identity N by N matrix. And if it is, sometimes we say that A is a right inverse, B is a right inverse of A, and in this case we'll say B is a left inverse. You have this concept of left and right that's not usual in numbers because of the commutative law. So you have this duality, left and right, and then that really mimics the world. And the world we live in, you have left and right. There's a duality going on which is rather deep. And this is why matrices are so important, because they encapsulate that duality that exists. We'll say a lot more about that. So therefore, if there exists a matrix B such that AB is identity, then the system of equations AX equals Y has a unique solution. Namely, X equals BY. Now the matrix B with this property is given a name. It's called the inverse of A. The matrix B is called the inverse of A. And is denoted by running out of paper. Here. So the matrix B is called the inverse of A. Well, maybe I should put that on the next page. I'm going to put it on the next page. Doesn't matter for you. Okay, so that's, how come I got two pages here? I don't need this one. Pardon? Oh, let's go back. So let me just go on. Is that okay? Everybody cut to that far? Right? Namely. Well, that follows by symmetry. So, namely, X equals BY. Let's get to that point. So the matrix B is called the inverse of A, and is denoted by write like a doctor here, is denoted by A inverse. You see, so therefore, B equals A inverse if and only if A times B is the identity and B times A is the identity. Well, at least that's what we have. For example, I want to prove that 2 inverse, what is the inverse of 2? Well, that's a half. Why? Because 2 times a half is 1. But because of the commutative law, I don't have to check it in the reverse order. But for matrices, I have to check it in both orders. We'll see, we'll investigate a little bit later what happens when you only have one left, one either left or right. It has geometrical significance. Okay. So let's just... So it's easy to check. It's easy to check that a matrix, whether a matrix is the inverse of another. So by symmetry, what would be, so what would be the inverse of the inverse? It's A. Because if B is the inverse of A, then by the symmetry of the equations, A is the inverse of B. Something which is also, if A times, supposing, let's compute A, B inverse. Supposing that A and B are invertible, I claim that A, B inverse is equal to B inverse, A inverse, if A and B are invertible. And you'll see why the reversal of products. Why? So in other words, if A and B are invertible, I claim that the product of A and B is invertible. And what it is, it's the inverse of B times the inverse of A, but in the reverse order. So what? How am I going to prove things? So here I have something to prove. This is saying, so if I'm given that A and B are invertible, what I'm this equation is claiming is that the product AB is invertible. Moreover, that the inverse of the product is the product of the inverses, but in the reverse order. How do I prove that? How do I prove a statement like that? Use the definition. Right? If I want to prove that B is the inverse of A, what do I have to check? A times B equals the identity, and B times A is the identity. So let's just do it. Indeed. Let me just take B inverse, A inverse, and multiply it by AB. Okay, that's the candidate for the inverse of AB. So if I want to prove that the candidate of the inverse is the inverse, all I have to do is multiply the candidate times the matrix in both orders and see if I get the identity. Now here, of course, there's some brackets going on, because here I don't write brackets because of the associative law, and you notice I have collapsing in the middle, so this is B inverse, A inverse A, because A inverse is the inverse of A inverse A is the identity, and then, so the middle collapses by one, I have a house of cards here, the middle one collapses to the identity, but the identity just I can further collapse this, and B inverse B is I. Right? So they just collapse. And similarly, the other order, AB times A times, sorry. Now you can see why the order is so important, because if I'm going to have the cards collapsing, I better have opposing forces together so that they can annihilate each other. The same force together, so they can annihilate an opposing force to not each other. So I have A times the identity times A inverse, and this is A times A inverse, and I get the identity. Looks like a B, smells like a B, but maybe I should make it. It's okay. So I'm taking AB and multiplying it by B inverse A inverse in both orders. Okay, and then you get this collapsing down. Okay. Now we already saw that in the case for a 2x2, we already saw if A is a 2x2 matrix, A, B, C, D, we saw last time, and this number, which is A, D minus B, C, which is what we call the determinant of A. This is that A, the determinant of A. We're not supposed to know that, but yet it's going to come later. This implies that A inverse exists, and A inverse, in fact, is a very nice formula It's a 2x2 matrices where you take the you interchange the diagonal entries and divide by delta, and then take the negative of the non-diagonal entries and divide by delta, and that's the inverse. And we prove that. How would you prove that if somebody just, we just proved it last time. All you got to do is multiply this A times this candidate for the inverse in both orders and check that you get the identity. And we did that last time. Okay. Now, we have such formulas for higher order matrices, 3x3, 4x4, n by n, unfortunately involve the theory of determinants, which we're going to do later. So we're going to postpone these more general formulas. But this one, having for the 2x2 case, is quite useful to have the formula for the inverse. I don't know if the book does it early, but I think it's useful to have it early. Now, what I want to do now is to find another method of finding inverses, which will work for any matrix. So I'll give you a decision procedure for the invertibility of a matrix. And as a result, you'll see that it, for a matrix to be invertible, it has to be square. It'll come out of the theory of equations because it has to do, if an inverse exists, a system of equations has at most one solution. Or, for example, that would mean if it was homogeneous, then it would have only the zero solution. But we know systems of equations exist. We have more rows, more unknowns than columns. So if you have a matrix which has more columns than rows, you have a system of equations that could be the coefficient matrix of a system of equations with more unknowns than equations. If you look at the homogeneous system of equations of that coefficient matrix, then we know that it has a non-trivial solution. So that means the solution is not unique, so that means the matrix cannot be invertible. So a long squat squat matrix like that cannot be invertible. Okay. Now, it could be one like this, but okay, let me just talk about the transpose, because that's useful, because I wanted to talk about the transpose now. Before I talk about go on with inverses. So let's go on to the, is that where I am, 6? Let me have a new sandwich. Okay, let's talk about the transpose of a matrix. Now, basically, the transpose of a matrix, so if you take A equals the matrix Aij, then the transpose of A is, so this is M by N, say, is the N by M matrix whose Ij entry is Aji. In other words, the ijth entry of the transpose of A, the element in the ith row jth column of A, is the entry in the jth row ith column of, in other words, the ijth entry, whose ijth entry, namely the entry in the ith row jth column, is the entry in the jth row ith column of the original matrix A. In other words, so A transposed denotes the transpose of A. And the ijth entry of A transposed equals Aji, namely the entry in the jth row ith columns. In other words, what the transpose does is just interchange rows and columns. So for example, let's look at it just for a column matrix. If I take a column matrix, x1, xn, and I transpose it, so if I look, that's an n by 1. So if I transpose it, I'm going to get a 1 by n, and the entries in that first column are just going to be the entries in the row vector. So I'm just writing it out this way. And similarly, if you take a row vector and you translate it, you just get a column vector. So transpose just changes row vectors into column vectors and column vectors into row vectors. So for example, if I take the matrix say 1, 2, 2, 3, 1, 1, and I transpose it. So basically, as I want, if I want to get the entry, so this is a matrix which is, I'm taking the transpose of a 2 by 3 matrix, the transpose is going to be a 3 by 2. So what I'm going to do is I go, if I want to get the entries in the first, say, column of this matrix, then I just have to look at the entries in the first row of the original matrix. So in other words, if I want to get the first entry in the first column, I go to the first row. So it's going to be this matrix, 1, 2, 1, and the entries in the second column of the transpose will be the entries in the second row of the original matrix. So I just interchange rows and columns. That's all it does. Okay. Right. Okay. Now, one important property of the transpose is, well, there's some important properties. For example, if you take A plus B transpose, this is rather easy to see. This is just A transpose plus B transpose. And another property, if you take A times C, a scalar multi times transpose, this is just equal to C times A transpose. So the transpose of a sum is the sum of the transposes, and the transpose of a scalar multiple of a matrix A is just the scalar multiple of the transpose of A. Those are rather easy to see just from the definition of what's going on. A little bit more serious is this one, namely that A times B transpose is equal to B transpose times A transpose. Here you have this again, this inversion of the order. Why? It has to be because he couldn't do it in the other order, because if A were M by N and B were N by P, then you couldn't multiply B, it might not be possible to multiply A transpose times B transpose. So you would see that this is what has to be. Now, I'll leave you to prove this because I want to get on. There's a very nice way of proving this. I leave this as an exercise. And the way, don't do it using indices. If I have some time, I'll come back to it. But I want you to think about it. Use it by column by column. Try to show that, look at the column. Do it column by column. So try to look at column and do it column by column. Prove it in the hint. Prove it column by column. In other words, reduce it to this case where B is a column matrix. Because if you take the column, the jth column of AB transpose, that's equal to the transpose of the ith row. If you want to take the jth column of AB transpose, that's equal to the transpose of the jth row of AB. And I know what that is. So you take the transpose of that, and you can get it very, very quickly without having to do any indices. I may give the proof next time, but I want to get very quick to because of the web work for the inverse. But anyway, just look at this and look at your hand at that, and then I'll give you next time a very nice way of doing it. I haven't seen it like that in any text, but I was thinking on the way here. If you just use that approach, do it column by column, you'll find the proof becomes reduce it to the case where you have B as a column matrix. It becomes very, very easy. Okay. So now I want to discuss we want to give another method for finding the inverse of a matrix now. So we want a decision procedure. For deciding the invertibility of a matrix. Invertibility of a matrix. And finding its inverse. When possible. Now let me just do it in an example, just to illustrate. The example is quite. So let's just do an example, and the decision procedure is basically just Gaussian elimination. So basically, we're given a matrix A. So let's supposing we have the matrix A, which is 1, 2, 2, 3. We already know it's invertible because the determinant is 3 minus is minus 1. But that's, I don't want to do it that way. I want to give a different way, which will work for higher size matrices. Okay. So I want to find the inverse of A. I want to decide whether A is invertible. Well, to decide whether A is invertible, if I can solve uniquely for X, so I look at the system of equations. So we consider AX equals Y. The system of equations. Now here, in other words, where x is going to be x1, x2, and y equals y1, y2. And I want to try to solve for x. Using Gauss-Jordan elimination. So in other words, I have the system of equations. So I have the system of equations. X1 plus 2x2 equals to y1. I don't take particular constants because I want to take arbitrary constants because I want to prove that the system is invertible for arbitrary y's because that's important. And then I'm going to have 2x1 plus 3x2 is equal to y2. Now I'm going to apply solving Gaussian elimination. Otherwise, I want to solve for the x's in terms of the y's. So intuitively, when if I can get a unique solution, then the coefficient of the y's is going to be my inverse. That's the idea. And we'll put it in another form using a bookkeeping matrix without equations. But to see what's going on, it's best to use the theory of equations. So in this way, I'm just going to, well, if you like, I could, let's just do it by the, in this case, it's so easy to just do it by Gaussian elimination. So let me just subtract the first equation. So equation 2, and I'm going to subtract equation 1. And that's going to give me x1 plus 2x2 equals y1. And then I'm just minus 2 equation 1. So I'm taking equation 2 and subtracting off from it twice equation 1. That will get rid of x1 in the second equation. And then I'm going to get minus x2 equals y2 minus 2y1. All right, now I'm going to, if I can multiply, so I can say multiply the, if I multiply this equation 2 by minus 1, I'm going to get x1 plus 2x2 equals y1, and then I'm going to get x2 equals 2y1 minus y2, and I have really basically one more step to get it to reduced form. Namely, I have to eliminate the variable in the x2 from the first equation. So I'm going to take equation 1 and subtract off twice equation 2. And that's going to is going to get x1. So I'm going to get here, it's y1 minus twice 2y1 minus y2. And that's going to be equal to minus 3y1 plus 2y2. Okay. And so x2 is going to be 2y1 minus y2. So now if I write this in matrix form, I'm going to get x1, x2 is equal to the coefficient matrix of the y's is minus 3, 2, 2, minus 1, and then y1, y2. So in other words, I have solved this system. From what I see, I have the system, the solution has a unique solution. And so I claim that the matrix 1, 2, 3, 4 is invertible. And the inverse 1, 2, 3, 4 is equal to minus 3, 2, 2 minus 1. Oops, something wrong. There's a 4 somewhere. Is it y1 minus 2? That's minus 3, 1. Minus 3, 2. 2 minus 1. I use the format. Pardon? There's something wrong here. Which first equation? Oh, I copied down the matrix wrong. 1, 2, 2, 3. Okay, 1, 2. That'll do it. Okay. 1, 2, 2, 2, 3. Ah, life is good again. Okay. It works. We knew what the answer was before, but we just wanted to recover. I haven't proved that this method actually does produce the inverse, but we'll see later. But I just want to go through the formal aspects of it. Now, another way of, I'm going to redo this calculation using a so-called bookkeeping matrix. So basically, what you have here is that, so you have here x is equal to this matrix, minus 3, 2, 2, minus 1, y, which is equal to minus 3, 2, 2, minus 1, I just want to motivate what I'm going to say next in terms of the bookkeeping. So let's just, I want to just redo this calculation more or less along the way that the text does it, just writing out the bookkeeping matrix. And instead of, if we look at our matrix here, we have AX equals Y. You can write this as AX, AX is equal to the identity times Y. This is what I want to write. Now, when I'm solving my equations, basically what's happening, so if I look at my system, I'm going to have, the y's are really just kind of placeholders. Really, what you want is you want to keep track of the coefficients of the y's, okay? So basically, if you write this matrix A, and then we'll put an I here. So in other words, I'm going to write this, that's going to be the augmented matrix, well, of this system, but I'm going to eliminate the y's. When I eliminate the y's, I'm going to replace an identity here. So basically, in the first one, I have, because the identity times y is y. So in this case, in the first case, I just have y1 and y2. Iy is just y1, y2. But when I change them, instead of the y, I'm going to have a different matrix. And what matrix comes there, you can see it like this, is that if you take this system and you write it like this, so I'm going to write the system this way, and then I'm going to perform my operations. So we'll write this system as, we're going to write this system this way. A, I, and then perform the row reductions. So what happens here in your system of equations, is this. In other words, your matrix A was what? Your matrix A was 1, 2, and then 2, 3. And then here I'm going to put 1, 0, 0, 1. Okay, that's I times y. So the y's, I'm just really interested in the coefficients of the y's. That's in the spirit of solving systems of equations. We just worry about the coefficients. So now I'm going to do is I'm going to apply Gaussian reduction to this system. And the first one is then you're just going to, the first thing is I'm going to subtract off twice the first row from the second. So I'm going to take row 2. So I'm going to take row 2 minus 2 row 1. Okay. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to do the same thing on the whole matrix, on both sides at the same time. So what I'm going to be doing, actually, the row operations applies not only to the coefficients, but also the constants. And why I put the 1, 0, 0, 1, you'll see in a minute, because then you're going to keep track of the coefficients of y1 and y2. That matrix on the right will keep track of the coefficients of y1 and y2 as you go. And you can see it as from the example I did. So in this particular case, I'm going to subtract off. So you're going to have 1, 2, and then 1, 0. And I'm going to subtract off twice the first from the second. So I'm going to get 0 minus 1. And I do the same for the whole row, including that 0, 1. So I have to take twice the first from the second. So I'm going to get minus 2, 1. Okay. So if you look back at the other thing, you're going to see if you can see that in this after the first elementary operation, my equation was x1 plus 2x2 equals 1, minus x1 was minus 2y1 plus y2. So it keeps track of the coefficient. Now the next thing I want to do is I'm going to subtract just minus 1 times rho 2, and I'm going to get 1, 2, 1, 0, and then 0, 1, 2, minus 1. So I just multiplied the equations by minus 1. And then the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to subtract off twice the first, second from the first row. So I'm going to get rho 1 minus 2 rho 2. And here I'm going to get twice. I'm going to get 1, 0, 0, 1. So you can see the decision procedure, basically. When you can get to a situation where you have your matrix, and if you can rho reduce it to the identity matrix, then the matrix is invertible. And what's on the other side of the bar is the inverse. That's the decision procedure. Okay. So in this case, I'm going to take twice the second row. I haven't finished it here, so I have 0, 1, 2, minus 1. I'm going to take twice that from the first, so this goes out, and I'm going to get 1 minus 4, which is minus 3, and I'm going to get 0, minus 2, so it's 2, I guess, eh? And so this is the identity matrix, and this is A inverse. Okay. Now this procedure works for any matrix, and we'll go through the Y's next time, you can see in the text. But that's a formal procedure for finding the inverse of any matrix. So a matrix is invertible, so the basic thing is a square matrix is invertible. Well, in fact, they're the only invertibles we saw before. A non-square matrix couldn't possibly. Because if a matrix is invertible, so if you take a tall, thin one, well, the other thing didn't work. So if you take its transpose, then it can't be invertible. But it's an easy exercise to show that a matrix is invertible if and only if its transpose is invertible. That's why the transpose was introduced. So you can go, so a square matrix, if and only if it is row equivalent, to the identity. And this is proven in the book, and I'll prove it next time. But for now, this is a decision procedure for the invertibility of a matrix. And to find the inverse, you just take a general A, you just take the general matrix system of equations, the coefficient matrix A, AX equals Y, and solve for X in terms of Y by using Gaussian elimination. The coefficient matrix of the right-hand side in terms of the Y's, coefficient matrix of the Y's, is the inverse of A. And formally, if you don't want to think of equations, you just want to work with matrices, you use this double, you write down your matrix A, you write it to the right of it, the identity matrix of the same size, you row reduce the whole thing, what you want to do is you want to row reduce the matrix A, which on the left to element to the identity if possible, performing the elementary row operation on the whole rows, not just on A, but on the whole row as you go. At the end, when you get the identity, what's on the right side is the inverse. And that's the formal decision procedure. Okay, we'll stop. By the way, you can pick up your assignments. If you haven't had a tutor, if they were name on it, they come to me. So if you want to get your assignment back, you'll have to come to my office. I'll be there on Friday afternoon, if you like, all afternoon.
Where is your office?